gets the exact result of the activities that they have performed in the past. And it is said in the Puranas that the karma of a person eventually finds the person and gives its result to the person, exactly as a calf is able to locate its mother amongst a million cows. So that principle is applicable even in the material world. So even in the spiritual world, it is actually Krishna and Krishna's representatives who decide who should get the mercy of Sri Krishna. So in the Madhurya Kadambini and in the Bhakti Sandarbha, it has been clearly said that bhakti comes to an individual through the agency of a devotee. And those devotees who are spreading bhakti are the ones who were handpicked by Sri Rupa Goswami, like Srila Prabhupada, all the previous acharyas. So, if not directly, then at least through parampara, we were handpicked by Srila Rupa Goswami. So that is the answer to the query. The acharyas were certainly directly handpicked, and either directly or indirectly, we were handpicked by their agents, you know, all the various commanders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's army. Thank you. Maharaj, would you like to?
I think there will be many questions. Okay. This was a good answer.
Srila Prabhupada said that it was not necessary reading many books. He said that it would be enough reading / studying very deeply Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sisi, NOD and Krishna book. In other occasions, he said what we should study also what the six Goswamis have left for us, how to combine these two instructions.
Before we answer this question, it may just be useful to know that Srila Prabhupada, when we are understanding anything that Srila Prabhupada says, then often we will find there are different statements. And this is with any subject matter, any instruction. They often say you can find the Srila Prabhupada quote for anything you like. Of course, within reason. And sometimes there may be quotes which are seemingly contradictory, but these are not contradictory. Because when we see that every statement has a time, place and circumstance around it, and every statement was perhaps said to a certain person for a certain reason, then we can see that different ways statements can be true. Like say for example, if I say to you, birds of a feather flock together, do you agree? Yeah. But then what about if I say to you, opposites attract? Do you agree? Both are true in one sense. But then you say, how can they both be true? They're completely contradictory. Well, what about if I say to you, actions speak louder than words? Agree? But what about then if I say to you, the pen is mightier than the sword? Agree? But that's contradictory. So sometimes it's like that, that there may seem to be different contradictory instructions. When Srila Prabhupada is saying focus on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand that there's an emphasis on these literatures because in a meal we can say they are like the sabji, dal and rice. They are the main. So that's what we always focus on. That's why every single day in the morning in our temple, we never change that and we never will change that. We always read from Srimad Bhagavatam. In the evenings, we've always had that and we'll always have that we'll read from Bhagavad Gita. So those literatures are our foundational literatures. However, there are also, as Srila Prabhupada said, many other literatures which if understood by someone who is chaste to the parampara and by someone who has also grasped the Siddhanta of Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, then their explanations and elucidations on those literature can give us a deeper insight. So my personal approach to it would be that let us read Srila Prabhupada's books very, very deeply. Let us use understand those in a very detailed way. That's why we have Bhakti Shastri, that's why we have Bhakti Vaibhav. And if someone has the capacity and good teachers, after having grasped all of that literature, if they have good teachers and they have the capacity and they do it in a balanced way, then it's wonderful to also read many other things as well.
What is the logic behind choosing a specific meter in writing the Vaishnava poetry? Is there reasoning / secret message, or is it mostly intuitive?
This is a question for you.
So, different meters are selected based on different parameters. One parameter is how long is your message. Sometimes the message is very short, so you can write a short message using that long Sragdhara verse, but then you have to add a lot of fillers in there. So sometimes, depending on the length of the message, the meter is selected. For example, like I was quoting this wonderful commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shri Suri, and I was quoting from his Putana Leela pastime day before yesterday, that when he says, when the gopis put tilak on Krishna's body, he just has a very simple message. See Krishna, your name is more powerful than you, because when it comes to protecting even you, your holy name is used. So small message, small meter. Longer message, longer meter. And some meters are specific for certain moods. There is a category of literature named Dut Kavya, messenger poetries. So Hamsa Dut is one such poetry by Sri Rupa Goswami. Dut Kavyas are mainly written in Mandakranta meter. There is one specific meter. So there are some rules for some specific types of poetry. Otherwise, in general, the poet can select according to the length of the message that they want to encapsulate in a particular verse. So that is what I have seen by observing the poetry of the various poets. So I hope that satisfies the query.
How neophyte devotees should listen and understand Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan to do not become sentimental or to not take it cheap?
I believe that it is very important for all devotees to hear about Krishna, because the movement is for becoming conscious of Krishna. This is very much stressed in Krishna's twice repeated statement in the Gita that please help me, I'm a little tired. Manmanabhava Madbhakto Majaji Mang Namaskuru. Manmana, think of me. Think of me, he says. Develop the mood of a devotee, that is, to serve me, offer your obeisances to me, worship me. So on all stages of Krishna consciousness, we need to hear about Krishna. Once Prabhupada said he wrote the Bhagavatam so that we can think of Krishna, no? Think of God. So the question is that is there, but now the question is, what, from where should I read, from which book, which literature? Now we all have taken to the line of Srila Prabhupada, and therefore we need to be nourished in that line. In other words, even if we may get an information about Krishna from another source, it is important that it is coming in the mood of Srila Prabhupada. It's almost like there is the mother who nourishes us with her breast milk, and we get strength from it. And even so happens that the mother has wet nurses, you know, this is in traditional aristocratic families, so that the mother will not has maybe a few children or will not always give milk, but there are others who give milk on behalf of the mother. But the others, the vet nurses' milk must be in tune with the mother's milk. Maybe the same blood group or something to be in tune. Otherwise, the little child will develop constipation or the opposite of constipation and suffer very much. So even if we read from other sources, it should be confirmed by our main spiritual master, our founder Acharya. That is important. Now, a third question which comes up is something which I also thought of saying when Keshava Maharaj gave his very wonderful answer. You know, in spiritual life there is something like following your intuition. So when you begin, as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you will see in your heart that you feel a certain attraction to move in one direction. And this attraction stays with you, it goes on, and then you will think when the attraction comes, yeah, I need to respond to this attraction. And this attraction may be different from your God brother's or God sister's attraction. There may be devotees in our movement who like to just read from again and again the Krishna book, and they are fully nourished and satisfied because that's how they are. But there may be others who will think, our tradition has this vast richness of the Goswami literature, and we have seen quotations where Prabhupada says they must be studied, and then the devotee will feel, yeah, I like really very much the way Raghunath Goswami writes. Oh, that really gets to me. That answers my questions. Or I think many of you have felt, when I read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport, they speak very much to me. So then you should follow this natural attraction. These would be my three points in answering the question. I hope I have answered your query in some degree of satisfaction.
So next question is for Hari Prasad Prabhu. You were speaking about how Rupa Goswami could understand the heart of Gauranga. We can see also how other poets were also able to be in tune with feelings of, I can't read this next word, but it says something Krishna, and then it says, could you speak more about this matter to get tuned in?
Getting tuned in.
Tuned in.
Yeah.
So, different poets who have occurred at different points of time and in different places have managed to somehow speak in the same language of love for Sri Krishna. For example, Sri Jayadev Goswami, who appeared before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vidyapati and Chandidas. Then there are devotees in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then there are devotees in other lines. and all of them are managed to, on many occasions, speak in one single line. In Shastra, it is called Ek Vakyata, one line of thought is present between all of them. So this happens because, especially in the case of poets who have attained to the stage of Samadhi, because in the stage of Samadhi, the Siddhantas are absolutely clear and one doesn't have any doubts about the foundational principles of Krishna Bhakti. So in terms of Siddhanta, then you don't see any differences. But still, doesn't mean that all of them have the same taste. So every individual poet still carries that specific flair of their spiritual nature in their poetry. So we see different poetry. Rupa Goswami's poetry is fully laden with humility. And Sri Jiva Goswami's poetry is laden with humility, plus there is a lot of Siddhantic approach even in the poetry. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami's poetry is mainly about crying in separation. And so, you know, just not every masala is not garam masala. we need to have different masalas in the store, spices. So similarly, we have different poets who add spice to Krishna's life in different ways, but they are all masalas. Basically, they are all poets who are tuned into Samadhi, therefore they are able to see in the same way, and that is the reason. So I hope they satisfy the query. Thank you.
I find that I only have theoretical information about spiritual life. How does personal realization feel like? Can you give any concrete example?
So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pavitram Vinamuttamam, Pratyaksha Guramam Dharmyam, Susukam Kartam Avyayam. And Krishna says this is not just the king of knowledge, but it's actually something to be directly perceived, directly experienced. I think all of us in the room have direct experience of the philosophy in small or bigger ways. There have been times when we've read things, times when we've experienced those very things in our life. There have been times when we've made a prayer and we very much experienced Krishna's reciprocation. So this is a living theology. It's not just a philosophy, it's something that we can directly experience. Yet, clearly it depends on the quality of one's life, the amount of experience that they will be able to have. So what are those qualities in someone's life that allows for greater experience of the philosophy? That's a very, very important question. So the first thing is that hearing philosophy has to be accompanied by good sangha. Because satam prasangam mama vidya samvido, from that discussion of philosophy in good sangha, Shraddha, Radir, Bhakti, you know, faith, attachment, experience is coming. So the first thing is that studying books without good association will only take you so far. The second thing is studying books should be accompanied by seva. One of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's most quoted verses, Ata Shri Krishna Namadhi Na Bhavet Graya Indriye Seva Mukhe Jivado Svayameva Spuratyada. Krishna, his name, fame, form, qualities, and pastimes cannot be perceived by the blunt material senses, but only when the senses are purified by service does one become eligible to experience. So, experience also depends on purified senses, which come from service. And then we can also say that ultimately experience is dependent on mercy. We have to we have to please the Lord. You cannot force your force an experience. That is in His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj often says, you can open many doors to get to Krishna, but then the final door is locked from the inside, and Krishna has to open that one for you. So yes, we endeavor and then we wait for grace and mercy. Therefore the Vaishnavas are always in a mood of prayer. When we want to internalize knowledge, then there's Shravanam, there's Mananam, which means contemplation, then there's Nididhyasanam, which means some practical application. But then the Vaishnavacharyas also say there's Vandanam, that we're also praying. So I think these are some things that philosophy turns into experience, a tangible, direct perception when there is good Sangha, when there is service, and then when ultimately the Lord's grace descends to bring that reality in front of our eyes.
So now we were, the question of devotees were a little bit shy to ask them personally. It were written down, were answered to some extent already. Now we would like to give the opportunity to those.
Hare Krishna. I have a question to His Holiness Kishore Maharaj. You mentioned in the first seminar you gave, you mentioned these three fields of where we fight, the soul, the sangha, and the society. And my question is, very specifically, maybe you have an idea how to create or even become a part of a sangha who is having the goal to do book distribution as grihasthas, to do something for society from scratch, or to start a sangha like this, because you experienced in this field. So maybe you want to say something about that.
So yes, amongst Vaishnavas there is also personalism. We are all devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, followers of Srila Prabhupada, but we all have different personalities, we all have different approaches to spiritual life, we all have different ways in which we're inspired to make Krishna smile. So in association is said sajatiya, one should look for like-minded association. That doesn't mean we form cliques, it doesn't mean we get together with a few elite people who we can connect to and then don't say or see anyone else and block them from your phone book and other such things. No, we don't do that. We're one movement, we're one family. But it's natural that we will gravitate towards spending more time with certain individuals. And therefore, in doing any service, we always try to find individuals who are inspired in a similar way. This is even happening in the spiritual world, because in the spiritual world there are also camps, left wing, right wing, and different groups going on. So yes, to perform any service, when we do it as a group, when we do it in cooperation with others, then that creates a very powerful energy. We see how much was achieved in our movement when groups of devotees came together with the same intention and worked together cooperatively. So yes, try to find one person in the beginning who has the same desire as you, who has a similar vision to you, and form a relationship. And then what we have to do is to expand that service, we have to attract others. But when we want to attract others, we do it by inspiration, not by intimidation. Perhaps in our movement we've tried to expand things like book distribution through intimidation and through making devotees feel bad, or making them feel as though if they don't do this they're somehow second class or they're second best. And perhaps that left a very sour taste, and people then, whenever there's intimidation, whenever there's coercion or imposition, even if it works for some time, the ultimate result will be that everything will break down. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, love and trust. So develop a sangha which is like-minded, which is functioning on love and trust, and then through inspiration, try to encourage others to be part of that wonderful service to Krishna. And if they're inspired in a different way, then honor that. And one last thing I'll say is, when it comes to book distribution, try to see that everyone is part of the book distribution. I'll tell you a story going a little bit away from Shastra. I was listening to a lecture, a video by Mark Zuckerberg. So anyway, he went to Cape Canaveral. You know Cape Canaveral? NASA. So he went to the space station. And so JFK, he went into the bathroom and he saw the janitor. And the janitor was so enthusiastic, like he was doing everything so attentively, cleaning, putting everything in place, so he saw him from a distance. So then he came up to the janitor and he said, what inspires you to be a janitor, like a cleaner? Why are you so inspired about this? And the janitor looked back at him and he said, I'm not a cleaner, I'm not a janitor, I'm part of a team that's going to put a man on the moon. So JFK understood this is an incredible organization, because he doesn't just see, oh, I'm doing this task, or everyone's part of the team that's going to achieve something amazing. So yes, everyone is part of the Sankirtan movement. Some are on the front line, some are supporting, some are resourcing, everyone's doing different things. So try to create that cohesive atmosphere so that everyone feels part of it, and then naturally the temple will come together and support that. Because after all, that is the purpose of our movement, Sankirtan.
Thank you very much for those questions and answers. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
This is like a bit personal problem of mine, but maybe some of you share it also. So, it's like my false ego keeping me away from bhakti all the time. I think it's like that. And also because of like that I want to be appreciated, or that I'm proud, I also judge other people, and yes, it's not that I want to, but the thoughts always come and I can't keep of them. So yes, I wanted to ask what to do about that, or if you can like humble my false ego, because feel that I'm also very yes, I'm not so receptive, because you always want to protect yourself, or
you can always give up something very easily when you have a clear understanding for something that is higher. So you have to ask yourself, how far have I come with this pattern, with my old pattern, ego is there, fear of being criticized, and so many things, we are a whole packet. How far can I get with that? And how far have I come with that? Then you can see, where do I wish to go? And if you are enthusiastic about your goal, you will definitely give up those things which do not bring you there. Most of us have the feeling when we are an ego that we want to be right. But do you want to be loved by Krishna or do you want to be right? You have to ask such questions to yourself. In other words, by focusing on the higher goal, you can give up the other things. I want to give you an example. I must admit, my strongest time is not the morning. I'm usually very tired in the morning because this is from childhood. I think my blood pressure is not so good in the morning. And if it's up to me, I would not get up so early. But if I understand, well, getting up and chanting in the Brahma Muhurta has so much more benefit, then I will even get up at a time which I would normally call an inhuman early time. So you have to focus on what is of higher importance to you, and then it's very easy to give up the lower thing, really. And when you are tempted, in other words, when you come in a situation where your ego wants to react in one way, and you already have understood it's not so good now, then you have to put a line on your ego and say, come on, we are going now by a different method. I will end by introducing you to a method which I call the emotional traffic light. This is, by the way, something very concrete. A traffic light is there in order to regulate the traffic. When it's red, as we all know, it says stop. When it's yellow, it says wait. And then when it's green, it's go. In the same way, you should have your emotional traffic light. When something happens that upsets you, go on red, stop. Don't react at the moment. And switch over to the yellow phase. What will be the most appropriate way to act now for my spiritual purpose? Then do that. Think a little. And only when you have a solution, then act and go on green. This emotional traffic light would save the world from many world wars. It would help that friends don't say things which friends don't say to each other. It will help you also. Very practical and very simple. Hare Krishna, thank you for your honest question. You were very courageous today. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, I have a question regarding Dharma and Swadharma, Sanatana Dharma. It's from your class, Maharaj, but everybody can answer if you like. When Prabhupada was interviewed in the beginning by reporters, many times he said, you have a headless society and I came to give you the head. So I will create Brahmanas. This was usually, at least in some instances, his response. And in 1977, he realized that not everyone can become a Brahmana. So he said, you have to, a devotee doesn't mean he has to become a Brahmana, he can live in his Swadharma, his nature. And yeah, I just wonder, he always explained Varnasham Dharma, but at the same time he tried to bring people to a different different position, different nature. And I also remember the story of Vishwamitra Muni. It took a long, long time and he transformed from a Kshatriya to a Brahmana or Shaptarishi. So, and I wonder, why Srila Prabhupada thought he can make very quick people to Brahmanas? So if it's so difficult, and the reality shows more or less that it's quite difficult. So maybe you have some thoughts.
God damn it, man.
Yeah, very good question. So on one hand, everyone has their nature. And Krishna even says, what would repression accomplish? You have to do your own dharma. On another hand, it seems like Srila Prabhupada was trying to create a society of brahmanas. So how do we understand that? Yeah, it's not concrete. It's not black and white. And we have to see that when we're looking at dharma, we're looking on different levels. And when we say brahmana, we can also see on different levels. For example, brahmana, brahma jana didi brahmana. How does that best be mean?
Janmana jayate shudra.
Janmana jayate sudra. By birth, everyone's a sudra. Samskara bhavet dvija. Then when they do samskara, then they're dvija. Veda patat bhavet vipro. And then when they study the Vedas, then they're understood to be a vipra. But then brahma jana titi brahmana. One who understands who actually is Brahman, that person is a brahmana. So that perhaps is the kind of, in one sense, the purest definition of a brahmana. Now say, for example, one of our cooks in the kitchen, who's a Vaishnav, who's served in the kitchen for many years and is a very sincere devotee. By activities, they're not a brahmana, they're a cook. But do they understand who is Brahman? Yes, they've read Srila Prabhupada's books. They know, I'm a soul, I'm Krishna is God, I'm a servant. And therefore, in one sense, because everyone is becoming a Vaishnav in our society, because everyone is, no matter what their varna is, everyone is studying Shastra. Therefore, in one sense, in ISKCON, everyone should know who is Brahman, who is Brahman. And everyone should be able to communicate that to society. So in that sense, we can say Prabhupada was saying, I'm trying to create a society of brahmanas, a society in which everyone knows who is Krishna. Can you really be in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness and not know who Krishna is? It would be a little strange. Everyone knows who Krishna is. In that sense, everyone's a brahmana. But by activity, is everyone a brahmana? No. Not everyone's meant to be a teacher. Not everyone's meant to guide in that way. Others have another dharma. So it's, as Vaishnavas, to some extent, we transcend. I was thinking the other day, actually, in ISKCON, you can be all four varnas in the same day. Because in the morning, you can sit on the Vyasasana and give a class and you're a brahmana. And then during the day, you can go out and distribute books and, you know, some charming words to convince people to part with their hard-earned Lakshmi. And all of a sudden, you're a Vaishya. And then you can come back and be thrust into a management meeting, because everyone in ISKCON has to be in a meeting somewhere. And then you may just be called upon because there's an emergency to wash the pots in the kitchen, and then all of a sudden, maybe a different varna. Because ultimately we're Vaishnavas, and everything is meant to lead to service. This is even mentioned in the third canto. Neha yat karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate atirta pada sevayaya jivanapi mitohi saha. So ultimately everything is leading to service. All your karma, your dharma, your vairagya ultimately leads to seva. So again, it's one of those things in which both statements are true. Are we trying to make everyone a brahmana? Yes. But are we trying to make everyone follow the dharma that's true for them? Yes. How can they both be true? They can, when you understand that there are different ways to see these things. Does that help?
Yes.
I can be also corrected if anyone wants to say something.
So that all our speaker, we can engage all our speaker. Maybe we could ask, who has a question for Hari Parshad Prabhu?
So we have heard from Satchananda Maharaj in one of his seminars that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that those who practice bhakti with faith, they will quickly advance, and those who do not, it will take them maybe many lifetimes. So could you maybe unpack the word Shraddha from Sanskrit from us and say something on this?
This question was posed in front of Sri Jiva Goswami as to what is Shraddha. And Sri Jiva Goswami answers the question in his commentary to Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. So, in Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu commentary, I'll quickly pull out the commentary. Sri Jiva Goswami says something about Shraddha. And what he says about Shraddha is that Shastrartha Vishwas Eva Shraddha, which means Shraddha basically means to have faith in the message of the devotional literature. That is the meaning of Shraddha. I'll point out the exact place where he says. Yeah, so you can see on the screen, Tasmat Shastrartha Vishwas Eva Shraddha Iti. So what is Shraddha? He says Shastra Artha Vishwas, to have faith in the message of the devotional literature is Shraddha. It's a very simple definition, because often it is defined in very vague ways. Shraddha means faith in a person, Shraddha means innate faith in a particular deity. But before the faith in the person and faith in the deity comes faith in the revealed literature. Because through that literature we know who is the worshipable deity, and through the literature we know how to identify a guru. So Shraddha is innate faith in the message of the devotional shastra. That is the straightforward answer given in the commentary to Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu 1.2.16, when he is defining Uttam Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, Kanishta Adhikari, and they are defined according to their Shraddha. So Sri Jiva Goswami first defines what is Shraddha. Shastrartha Vishwas Eva Shraddha. Shastra Artha Vishwas. Vishwas means innate faith in the Artha, in the meanings of Shastra, devotional literature. That is Shraddha. So I hope this satisfies you. It's coming straight from Sri Jiva Goswami. So thank you so much.
Now let's see a question for Sunil Sachinanda Swami.
Hare Krishna. I think sometimes when I'm chanting, one of the most common meditations, I think, in Sex and our philosophy is, please engage me in your service. And I try to think about this when I chant, and Maharaj, I've read parts of your book as well, The Living Name, and this was really helpful in helping me think about different meditations when I'm chanting. But then sometimes I feel like there's just a lot going on, in the sense that I'm thinking about this, and I feel connected at times, but I feel like my mind is not at peace. I don't know how to navigate this.
Yeah, there are various instructions how to chant nicely. The one which we like, which we hear often in our movement, is a quotation of Srila Prabhupada. When he was asked, what do I do with my mind, Prabhupada? Then he said, it's a question of the mind. You just chant and hear. No thinking, in other words. No meditation, no contemplation. But Prabhupada has said many, many other things. It's interesting. I'm sorry to... but it requires really a little look on it. Madhvacharya is talking about two ways of chanting. One is focusing with an effort, and the other is more a passive form of receiving the holy name. And some sannyasis in the Madhva Sampradaya say that as you chant and you do the focusing, you go into this, you know, here where the focus is usually here happening, you know, you see that when someone focuses, he gets lines on the forehead, he means he concentrates here. And the other is you just receive the sound vibration.
It just comes to you, and if you want to do this with some yoga, you focus here, not in the front of your head. You just receive. I found this interesting that in another sampradaya, they have also thought about what is various ways of chanting. And my answer to you is, when you feel you wish to focus and you want to connect with Krishna, then you will follow Bhaktivinoda Thakur's advice that you think about yourself as a soul, you think of Krishna, the Lord of the whom you are calling, and you think of the purpose. I'm here in this world, I have an unique opportunity to connect with you. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in a purport to Harinam Chintamani. We should meditate that we are an eternal part of Krishna. Krishna is our only master, and this is our purpose. This will help when you make an effort with your mind. But there are other times when you feel, let me just hear, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Then as you do this, you might come to a stage where you are totally unfocused, where you feel your mind becomes like dull or bored or highly distracted. So then it's time to perhaps prayerfully chant and read about prayer, like, my dear Lord, please engage me in your service, and so on. So as you do japa, you have to distinguish between the effortful focus and the more passive, relaxed receiving of the holy name. You will be very interested to note that as you go through the different traditions in the world, and this is a little bit, I have this interest, there is always this distinction between an effort which is put and a more contemplative approach where you just receive. It is in every tradition that, because those who practice genuine spiritual life have similar experiences. So there are instructions of Srila Prabhupada where he says, no mind, no concentration, just listen. That would be more the passive contemplative chanting. And others, he would say, we should concentrate on the meaning of the mantra. And then it is this. And what to do at which time, see yourself. You have to become a little bit mature, and then you will know. Hare Krishna. I hope this answer satisfies you in some degree. Hare Krishna. I'm learning from you. It's a good form of English.
Now a question for Keshava Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This has to do with your presentation, but the question is open to all three. So in the beginning of your presentation, you were talking about the stages of the confidential devotee and so forth. And all the presentations, we've heard about the best form is to be possessive of Krishna. Krishna is mine, so I have that sense of possession. And then we've had a very in-depth discussion of separation. And then we also know about Krishna's lila, he likes to steal, and actually the relationship between Srimati Radharani and Krishna is actually an illicit relationship, because she's married and he's not, and they're trying to meet each other in secret. And that's all good and well, if once we have a little faith in the process, we can suspend our disbelief. But all these things on a material level cause lots of suffering. Like, nobody in the material world wants to experience separation, because it's just pain. And everybody who has been a victim or has gone through an affair, it wreaks havoc. It's a mess. So, and also to be possessive is also not good. So how do we explain this to new people? In a way that makes them think, oh, okay, I'll give this a shot.
We explain Gita 3 to us.
Just on.
they will hear about these things eventually, and maybe they think, oh, no, thank you.
I'd say something and then I definitely will hand to our question. Once there was one devotee, I may get the details slightly wrong, but he was telling Srila Prabhupada, sometimes we go to the universities and we tell them that Ugrasen had this many thousands of gods, and you know, there were this many thousands of cows and whatever, you're saying some things, you know, that which sounds very fun. And Srila Prabhupada said, don't you have anything else from Shastra you can tell him? In other words, when we're connecting with the world, first we're generally explaining to them things they can understand, things they can appreciate. So anyway, but I think you understand that concept. So, but just to put it out there as a foundation for this answer, that generally, more confidential topics are spoken about in more confidential spheres where there's already a development of understanding of basic Siddhanta. So that's just the general point. But now your question is, how do we explain to people these things, you know, like, this is kind of the mystery of the spiritual reality. In the 15th chapter of the Gita, Krishna explains that this world is like a reflected banyan tree. So basically the spiritual world is a reflection, this world is a reflection of the original spiritual world. Now if you think about reflection, the lowest thing in the reflection, what does it become? Or what is it actually, the highest thing in reality? So for example, we see the lust of this material world, which is considered the most base, you know, the lowest type, and so many social problems, individual problems, all of that. But the adiras, the reflection of that lust, which is pure love, you know, in that parakya above, is the highest in the spiritual world. But when it's reflected here, then it becomes the lowest. So we have to begin to explain to people like this that there's a completely different reality. Now, if they begin to perceive everything of the spiritual reality through their material lens, it won't make any sense, because their basic parameter of understanding is wrong. And therefore, what we're first doing is trying to help them understand basic Siddhanta, basic philosophical points by which they can understand the foundation of what the spiritual world is based on, and then the more intimate things. You know, when you meet someone for the first time, you don't immediately ask them, like, yeah, what happened last night, you know, first you would say, oh, where are you from, how did you grow up, you know, who are your friends, you know, some basic questions, and then you'll be able to appreciate. So we have to explain to people like this that you can't understand the inner chambers of God's life until you first understand the basis of God's personality. First we have to understand tattva, and then we can understand rasa. And therefore, until people understand the basic ontology of God, the basic identity of God, then these inner aspects will not make any sense. And therefore we put the emphasis there. Please add something.
When individuals who come from material life with all their baggage into Krishna consciousness for the first time, so they carry impressions from many lifetimes over, and these impressions are usually very negative, especially regarding separation. Actually, melancholy is an emotion which is present in the material world as well as in the spiritual world. Melancholy has a very important place amongst emotions in the material world. If you see practically all, most of the dramas in the Western world, the central theme is melancholy. Now the question is, if suffering is so painful, why are all the dramas, most of them, based on melancholy? So the answer is, because people love to empathize with somebody else's suffering. They don't want to suffer themselves. People love to empathize with somebody else's suffering. And therefore, in Krishna's Leela, he has an element of separation, but without the material suffering. Externally, it appears as suffering, but internally, there is the experience of rasa. People cry, but those tears are, you know, they are not tears of material suffering. And this is spoken of in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is very clearly said, Sri Jiva Goswami makes the point in Krishna's Leela, Navindan Bhava Vedanam, in 10th canto, 11th chapter, verse 58. The translation says, in this way, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. So this is after Krishna has killed so many demons. But it is very clearly mentioned that they never perceived material tribulations. So this is one proof which can be shown to individuals, because this is the proof which Jiva Goswami uses in his Krishna Sandarbha to establish the fact that there was no material suffering in the pastimes of Shri Krishna. This is if we have to prove to somebody who is willing to listen, who has the maturity to understand. Otherwise, as Maharaj said, new individuals should not immediately be given what is known as Prayojan Tattva, or the highest. They should be given Sambandha Tattva, their basic relationship with Krishna, who they are, who is Krishna, and how to approach Krishna. Sometimes acharyas do make an exception. Srila Prabhupada, he sometimes gave the highest Prayojan Tattva even to a very newcomer. This is seen in the book Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. And in Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, the newcomer is Bob Cohen, who is now initiated as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He asks a question to Srila Prabhupada, and the question that he asks is Krishna attractive to rascals? So Prabhupada says, oh yes, he was the greatest rascal also. In the history of all the literature that I have read, this is the first, like, you know, adjective which took me by shock, where Prabhupada said, how is that? And Prabhupada said, because he was always teasing the gopis. And then Shyamasundar Prabhu gets amazed, teasing? And Prabhupada goes into a meditation and says, yes, sometimes when Radharani would go out, Krishna would attack her. And when she would fall down, Krishna, don't torture me in that way. They would fall down and Krishna would take the opportunity and kiss her. And then Prabhupada laughs. So, like, if any other preacher in ISKCON tries to speak this to a newcomer, the temple manager will call them aside and say, Prabhu, is everything okay? So, but you can see that an expert person can give the highest fruit from the tallest tree even to a new person. So that is Srila Prabhupada. But in general, new people should not be given the highest fruit from the tallest tree. They should first be taught to appreciate the tree in general, from the roots. So that is my answer. Thank you. I hope it satisfies you to some degree.
Krishna, His Holiness, Ishwara Swami said, in one sentence, our goal is to love God and to surrender. And now, can you connect these two, to surrender and to love?
I'm sorry, but Vrindavan Chanda, it's good if someone said and he's there, then we will get a much deeper answer from that person. So it's really a question for our Keshava Maharaj. No. The question is there. Please.
I was signed in last notes. There's many ways you could connect love and surrender. This is such a... How can you sum up love in a few lines or a few words? One way to see it is that there's only one thing that Krishna gives us that he never takes away, and that's free will. And so when we love someone, then our will and their will is completely aligned. And when two individuals like that are completely aligned, then this can be called surrender. But when there is some fighting, some doubt, some, you know, different conception, then this is a compromise surrender. And so love means to have complete faith. Love means to have complete alignment of that person's interest and your interest. Vraja, the word Vraja is very interesting. Harivarshapu is even saying more, but it means to move, to walk. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that the Vrajavasis are Vrajavasis because they are always walking with Krishna. And that doesn't mean just walking with Krishna to the cow pastures, or they're walking with Krishna in the sense of always walking with Krishna's will. They're always flexible, open, and completely aligned with Krishna's will. Of course, transcendentally, there are fights and there are differences of opinion, but even this is a complete alignment of will for loving exchange. So my understanding, or one way we can look at it, is that love and surrender means a complete alignment. I think in the Christian tradition they say, let thy will be done, something of that nature. So this is...
You have definitely answered it, yes. I think real, you know, when real love is there, you will do anything to satisfy the beloved, like Krishna will bow down to Srimati Radharani. This is a great gesture of surrender to put the that God puts his foot, his head on the foot of his beloved. And yeah, love actually means surrender. I think you know yourself when you had children, how you surrendered your comfort to let the child feel happiness and grow up nicely. Love elicits voluntary surrender. When there is no love, the surrender may be forceful. Like I know my father had to surrender to the Red Army. He was one of the last fighting Germans, and finally they had to wave the white flag. And he said, even a few weeks before his death, said, the customer service in the Red Army was lousy. They didn't take good care. So that type of surrender, forced surrender, is not so nice. But if you can do it because there's love, then the surrender is complete. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
my humble obeisances and deep gratitude for all your wonderfully nourishing and insightful presentation. Thank you so much. My question, I would love to hear from all of you, comes from the desire to understand a little bit the feelings and sentiments of the gopis. Today in both presentations you were hearing about Viraha Bhav and the, you both mentioned Gopi Deep. So my question is, how is it that the gopis, while expressing the ecstasy of love and separation, are also aware of Krishna's godhood? Because in one of the opening verses they say you are the indwelling witness in the hearts of all entities, and later your lotus feet destroy the sins of everyone. And I think even today in your presentation, Hari Prasad Prabhu, there was a quote, I think from Krishna Kanarvita, about Radharani's complaint, where she says, people of the world know you as the lifter of Govardhan, but they know that you are maintainer of the three worlds. And you know that Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna's associates in Goloka Vrindavana, he says they don't care about Krishna being God, or sometimes he even says they don't know that Krishna is God. So how the two come together, the expressions of most intimate loving feelings and awareness that Krishna is God?
So, in Goloka Vrindavan, there are various compartments. So, not all Goloka Vrindavan is the same. There is Goloka Vrindavan which is purely based on Madhurya. I'm using technical terms, sorry if somebody doesn't understand. Purely based on sweetness. And the Aishwarya is completely suppressed. But then there are sections of Goloka Vrindavan where Aishwarya does exist to a certain degree of extent. Now this is specified in the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he says that in Goloka there is a section where those who worship Radha Krishna in awe and reverence end up. So those who worship Radha Krishna with awe and reverence, not through Raganuga Bhakti, for them also there is a section of Goloka, because they can't attain Shuddha Vrindavan. They have to attain a section of Goloka where Aishwarya is predominant. Now he says, let me point out the exact verse. This is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12303. Riramsam Sushtu Kurvan Yo Vidhimargena Sevate Kevale Naiva Satada Mahishitvam Iyatpure. Somebody who wants to love Krishna but serves only through Vaidhi Bhakti. Sri Rupa Goswami says, doesn't take to Raganuga Bhakti. Mahishitvam, the maximum they can achieve is to become a queen of Krishna in Dwarka. So that is through Vaidhi Bhakti. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur raises a doubt in the commentary that Yesham tu Vrindavane Radha Krishna yor Madhurya Aspadane Abhilasha. Those who have a desire to relish Madhurya Ras in Sri Vrindavan. But Nyasa Mudradi Vaidhi Margano Sarana Bhajanam. But their bhakti is through Vaidhi. They want to attain Radha Krishna, but their bhakti is through Vaidhi Marga. Tesham Dwarkayam na Rukmini Krishna Kantasya Prapti. They will not attain Dwarka because their aim was not to attain Rukmini and Krishna. And he says, Nacha Vrindavane Radha Krishna Yavrandavan. They will neither attain Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. So neither Dwarka nor Vrindavan. So where will they end up? So then he says, Tesham Vidhi Margena Bhajana Karyase Aishwarya Gyanase Pradhanyam Yatra. Where Aishwarya is little prominent, Vrindavanasya Amshe Goloke Radha Krishna Prapti. That section of Vrindavan, that section of Goloka, they will end up attaining. So there are sections within Goloka Vrindavan where Aishwarya sometimes becomes prominent. And in those sections, in those sets of gopis, in their utterances, you will see Aishwarya Bhav prominently coming up. But you will never see this in the statements of Srimati Radharani. I hope that answers your query. Right. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I'm sorry I'm asking the second question, but from all three of our esteemed speakers, we have heard how important it is to reflect about the knowledge. So would you be kind to share with us briefly how you do the reflection part? Hare Parshatra, you started this morning, I think, saying something, hinting towards something that would be interesting, I think, for all of us.
Okay. Can you remind me what you're referring to? I said something about
it was something in the
Swadhyaya.
Swadhyaya
is a combination of two terms, Swa and Adhyaya. Swa means self, Adhyaya means study. So Swa Adhyaya becomes Swadhyaya, self study. So self-study of literature should be done in order to internalize the literature within ourselves. Many individuals read, but their reading is like the reading of a parrot. They think we have to complete a certain syllabus. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks some harsh words for them, actually. So I will point out what he says about them in order to emphasize the point. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says about in the Shri Bhagavat, and it's he wrote an article about it, that many people read with an intention not to absorb and reflect upon it, but simply just to memorize it, or you know, simply let me find it out. Yeah, students, this is what he says: we love to read a book which we never read before. We are anxious to gather whatever information is contained in it, and with such acquirement our curiosity stops. This mode of study prevails amongst a great number of readers, who are great men in their own estimation as well as in the estimation of those who are of their own stamp. In fact, most readers are mere repositories of facts and statements made by other people. But this is not study. The student is to read the facts with a view to create, and not with the object of fruitless retention. So this is what I was trying to emphasize upon. Basically, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted us to read so that we will write our realizations upon the topic. So every individual, I said, is supposed to write like a mini commentary on the texts that they are reading. A commentary may never be published, but it is for us to internalize the subject matter. Many times we just take it as a syllabus which we want to complete, or memorize something so I can make a display of it somewhere else. So that's not the purpose of study. The purpose of study is then to internalize it. I hope that answered your query.
I mean, it was a little different, the question. I'm sorry that I said that.
Okay.
It was in a class of Kesha Maharaj. I don't remember what he exactly said. And then you said how you are thinking about this point also. But then you read about this, and then it took two, three more.
Lavanya. I was reading and I took 3 days to find out the definition and all
that. So how do you do this process?
Okay. So when I start reading a particular text, the most important thing to focus upon is the word for word, which is often the most neglected one. If you take a simple verse, Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveta, Yuyutsavaha, Mamakaha, Pandavas, Chaiva, Kimakurvata, Sanjaya. It's like most individuals know. So on every word, the question has to be asked, Did I understand the meaning of this term? Yes. Dharma Kshetre. It is a abode of dharma. Question. Why? Sri Hari Suri's approach. On everything, ask a simple question. Why? Why is Kurukshetra Dharma Kshetra? Oh, I don't know the answer. Refer to the commentaries. Commentators will say, Vedas say, Kurukshetram Devanam Deva Yajanam Sarvesham Bhutanam Brahma Sadhanam. The Vedas will say, Kurukshetra is a place where even the demigods offer sacrifice, where all the living entities come to get liberated. Now I have understood why Dharma Kshetra is used. Why Kurukshetra? Because it is the place of Kuru. Then you find out something about Kuru, why it was named after him. Samaveta. Why did they gather? So we know why did they gather. Yuyutsavaha. Why are they Yuyutsava? Why are they eager to fight? So we know the entire general history of Mamakaha, mine. Why does Dhritarashtra say Mamakaha? Commentators will give various reasons. Pandavascha. Why does Dhritarashtra say Pandavas separately? Kim Akurvata. Akurvata past tense. Is not present tense. Past tense. Why is Dhritarashtra asking about past tense? If we read the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita was narrated in past tense. It is not being narrated live.
Why? Why?
So, I found out after doing a why on every word. So, Sanjay was on the battlefield when Mahabharata started. And Dhritarashtra was confident that as long as Bhishma is standing, we are going to win. On the 10th day, Bhishma fell. And Sanjay came back to Hastinapur to report to Dhritarashtra. Bhishma has fallen. At that time, Dhritarashtra got the shock of his life. That how did Bhishma fall? Sanjay, tell me from the very beginning. Dharma Kshetre, Kurukshetre, Samaveta, Yuyutsava, Mamakaha, Pandavascheva, Kim Akurvata. What did they do? In past tense. So Sanjay is narrating the entire Bhagavad Gita not in present tense. Although it is often said that Sanjay is narrating the Bhagavad Gita in present tense. But the fact is that Sanjay is narrating the Bhagavad Gita in past tense. This is also proven in Bhagavad Gita when Sanjay says at the very end, Ashrausham, that Samvadam idam Ashrausham Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. Prabhupada translates Ashrausham as I have heard in the past. Thus, I have heard the conversation of two great souls. So, Ashrausham is also a verb of past tense. And therefore, these are very two clear indicators in the beginning and the end that the Bhagavad Gita is not being spoken in present tense, in past tense. So, just by asking Akurvata, we got through a lot of understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. And Sanjay, why is his name Sanjay? Some completely Jayati, he wins over the king with his advice. So he is called Samjay. So he wins over the king with his advice every time. Therefore he is Samjay. So I am giving you a secret trick from my book. Alright? The most important thing in a verse is the word for word, which is often the most neglected thing in the verse. To take the word for word and to ask why on each and every word is their secret for unpacking, provided we know which commentators have unpacked, you know, which word. So that will, then you write down your comments that what you have understood, then you can easily speak to others. I hope this satisfies you.
I think at the back here, you would like to ask.
By the way, we are. That might be actually the last question of today, because time is also there, and we could also extend it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The atmosphere is just so focused, we even forgot to open the windows. One person who got it.
May I have a question, because I have saved
up. How can I say no?
related to every one of us, but I relate for every Maharaj, the Maharajas and Prabhu. I see today, I'm really, like Maharaj, you say, this Kurukshetra. You know, when you think, now it's just so close to be with Krishna, but you know you're conditioned, and you still have a lust. You still have these emotions, we are connected with material world. But by hearing about Krishna, you have this feeling, I really have some, you know, I really want to be with Krishna because it's so painful what is going on in material world, because this is not supposed to be like that for the soul. And this Kurukshetra is going on every day, because more you hear, more you chant, more you practice, anarthas are going out, and you need to be through devotees, because devotees are very good transparent, very good instructors for us to see our, like a mirror, to see our inabilities in our life. And I'm wondering how relate, how to respond when you just cannot respond properly in every step you take, because more, you know, when you wash something and everything is black, because more you wash something, more things are going out. And this is what's going on in Kurukshetra also, that Arjuna just put the bow down and arrow down, and he said, I cannot fight, but he was Kshatriya. So how to put your bow down, bow again and be a fighter when it's coming on the faces that all the blackish things are going out and you see what's going on in your heart, what to do then?
Hare Krishna.
You can also write poetry.
She's the poet.
Acha, I thought so. May I simplify your question and say, how can we not become discouraged in the face of overwhelming evidence that we are fallen? Is that all right? Yes, how to not become discouraged. Like all qualities in devotional service, courage develops when you create the right environment. Think of it as you want to cultivate a plant, then you have to take care that there's good earth, that there's good water, that there's sunlight perhaps. So in the same way, if you want to take care of your Bhakti Lata beach, your devotional you know, the devotional plant in your heart, and you don't want it to hang its head down, and you want it to become strong, you need a couple of things and a good environment. And I would say sadhana, sangha, and shastra. By the way, I took these three for Keshava Maharaj. So you have a nourishing spiritual practice. It's important. I would like to add the word nourishing. You have to see what nourishes your spiritual practice. Sangha is so encouraging. Oh, so, and you need regular contact with the shastra, because in the association of shastra, your faith is really born and maintained. That is a simple answer. May I do one thing?
May I secretly look at the wristwatch? It's not so secret. Can I maybe take the permission of Yogeshwar Maharaj and Hari Prashad, Hari Pasha? I will have to prepare my evening katha. It's already almost finished, but I need to go one time through, and you are very capable to answer all metaphysical and questions. Yes?
I have one question. Okay, before you go. For him.
Sorry.
How do you get an emergency seat on an airplane for a small person?
You talk about your...
I didn't catch the last bit. Emergency seat for?
For tall persons.
Oh, for tall
persons. He's also a little tall.
We can talk about it later.
We won't hold you, Maharaj. We won't hold you back.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
So I'm just coming. You can see.
So this will be now our last question. After that we will have a little break. And we have a little change in the program. Usually we had the Vrindavan Bhajans in the evening. But because we all got such an amazing amount of informations in our heart, we thought maybe it's more wise to just sing the holy name and digest a little bit all what we have received. And we will have, it looks, he has disappeared, but we were asking Gokeshna Prabhu to please lead the kirtan. So we will have the last question now, and then we will have around 20 minutes break, and then we will have bhajan with Gokeshna up to 6 o'clock for the kata of His Holiness Sachinandra Swami.
The question is to Keshava Maharaj, because they left already.
Hare Krishna. Before I ask my question, I would like to call the attention of the congregation that Nobu Krishna devotee guest in the temple. So first of all, thank you very much for welcoming me here. And I don't know a lot about the concepts, but this is something I just speak up, and I would like to know from you guys. My question is, what is the difference between the ego and the false ego, according to the teaching of Krishna?
Oh, wow, beautiful question. Thank you so much for being open-minded and coming. No one's a guest here, this is your home, so thank you so much. So your question is, what is the difference between the ego and the false ego? Ego comes from the Sanskrit word aham, and aham literally means me, or I am. So ego literally, although in the general concept of ego in the world we think of it as pride or vanity, that's how we generally think of ego, but in the strictest sense, ego means who you think you are. So everyone has a concept of who they are. And false ego just means that we have a false concept of who we are. So in this world, there are so many concepts. Like, for example, if we would stop someone on the street and we would say, who are you? Then someone may say their name, or someone may say where they come from or where they were born. Someone may say what their occupation is. Someone may say something about their likes or their dislikes. And these are all aspects of identity or ego, but we would say these are all false ego. And why are they false ego? Because they're all temporary identities. If I asked you your name, you could tell me your name, but that's not you, because you could change your name and you'd still be the same person. You could tell me your age, but your age will change. You could tell me your citizenship, but you can also change that. So false ego is identification based on temporary labels. Real ego is who you are. When everything else may change, that thing will never change. And the real ego, which all the traditions of the world explain, regardless of geographical or cultural, is that they explain that we're beyond this body, and we're beyond this mind, and we're beyond all of the labels that we put. We're actually all spiritual beings. We're spiritual beings who have a relationship with the Supreme Spirit. And the purpose of life is to awaken that real ego by connecting our individual spirit with the Supreme Spirit in a relationship of love. So yes, for ego means identity, false ego means a false sense of identity, and real ego means to know that you're a spiritual being and that you are entitled to eternal happiness, and that comes from making spiritual connections.